This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast on the Fantastic Four.
The kids will carry your coffin, that's alright, that's okay. They don't care what you look like, who you see, what you say. The kids will carry your coffin, that's alright, that's okay. They don't care what you look like, you
Welcome to an iFanboy special edition podcast on Fantastic Four. I'm joined with my good friend Jeff Cannata. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
Good. I feel like I need to apologize for making you take time out of your day to talk about this movie.
Oh no, it's like an exorcism. It's good to get it off your chest, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. So okay, yeah. So we're talking about the last superhero movie release of 2015. Which I almost didn't believe. I had to look that up like four times to confirm, but this is indeed the last of the comic movies. So this will be the last special edition podcast we do this year. Wow. And this was the much awaited Fox reboot of Fantastic Four, directed by Josh Trank, right?
That's correct. Yeah, exactly.
And there's been, I feel like the emotions going into this movie, at least for me, were mixed because the trailers were like, I'm like, oh, that doesn't look good. And like, oh, that looks like it has promise. Going into it, Jeff, what did you think of the movie?
Well, you know, I love the Fantastic Four. I understand that you've never been a big fan of that team, but I love the Fantastic Four. The Walt Simonson run of that comic was so influential to me as a kid, and like it made me fall in love with that team, and I love the Fantastic Four.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to say I don't. I mean, I like them. I mean, I respect. I mean, of course, I've read the Stanley Jack Kirby, the legendary run, and I've read Jonathan Hickman's recent run, and I've read it here and there, and of course the Simons and stuff. So I'm versed in the Fantastic Four. It's just that, you know, I'm a pretty big X-Men fan. You know, so it's
so many room in your life for so many teams.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, I love the Fantastic Four, and I was always of the opinion if they made a movie, it should be a period movie, like it should be set in the 60s. None of that was happening. And I know I've read the Ultimate Fantastic Four. I know that there's precedent for them being teenagers, but I just didn't feel like it was a good choice to have them be teenagers. Like, these are the Kennedys. These are like, this is a family. This is like adult human beings, right? Scientists. So I was already a little worried going in, but the movie itself was so much worse than I thought it could possibly be.
It was, I mean, I really haven't, so getting into it, so watching the movie, it probably about, I want to say halfway through, I had that same sinking feeling I had when I watched X-Men 3, X-Men's Last Stand, or whatever it was, the awful one.
Well, you're doing disservice to X-Men 3.
You think it's worse? No, I think that is, X-Men 3 is the worst ever. I don't know if this is worse than that.
Dude, at least in X-Men 3, there's like competent action beats. Like, this movie has no competently filmed action moments.
Yeah.
The only action moment that is even remotely interesting is on a television set behind a character deep focus.
It's true. It's so true. But yeah, no, I mean, and as I've thought about this movie, and normally when we talk about these movies, we talk about what we like, what we didn't like, and we're just going to dive into what we didn't like because there's just so much to not like. But I, walking out of it after I thought about it for a while, thought about it for a good couple hours of what I think about this movie, and I really got to put it in the same category as Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern.
Yeah.
In that for me, it is a – the pieces of what it could be are there, and then what they made was just so uninspired and almost just lazy.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good comparison. However, again, I will say like – From a comic book fan and superhero fan perspective, I think it's on par with those sort of the misunderstanding of what the characters are and just weird. It's like a movie from the 90s, like before Yes. We knew how to make superhero movies. But more than Green Lantern, more than X-Men 3, more than Catwoman, more than like bad superhero movies you can name, it also like fails from a purely cinematic perspective, from a purely technical perspective of like the climax of this movie, the big action set piece that we're supposed to have built up the whole movie for, is laughably poorly made.
Yeah.
Like it is so badly made. It is just people in front of a green screen kind of the sequence itself doesn't really have any logic to it. Dr. Doom is handled so badly in this movie.
I wouldn't even stop at Dr. Doom. I would say everyone is handled so poorly in this movie. In that, like, and that's the thing that drove me crazy is that, like you said, Fantastic Four is like the Kennedys. Like, it's so much, it's built on the sense of family, the sense of, you know, you've got, you know, Reed and Ben's friendship. You've got Reed and Sue's relationship. You've got Sue and Johnny's relationship, right?
Right.
And Victor's relationship with Reed and Victor's relationship with Sue. Like, there are all these lines about how people feel about each other. And this was so superficial. I was grasping for a relationship to hold on to, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
And we spend so much of the beginning of the movie with young Reed and young Ben. I don't know why.
Yep.
Like that, and you would think that if we're going to spend that much time with them, it would actually add up to some sort of relationship. But it doesn't. Nope. It doesn't. You get no sense of who Ben is as a person at all, other than that he works at a wrecking yard and his brother's a dick.
His family owns a junkyard on Long Island, which again, like, you go to the core of the character. Ben Grimm's from the Lower East Side. He's from Yancey Street, which is in reality Delancey Street in New York, you know, like,
right.
Like, and yes, New York has changed and the Lower East Side of the 60s is different from the Lower East Side of now, but keep him in New York. And don't get me wrong. I'm a Long Island boy at heart. It was great to see Oyster Bay get so much play in the movie. Although I do have to call foul is that you can't see the city from Oyster Bay. Like the shot where the power went out in his neighborhood and Manhattan's in the distance. Like, it's still a good about 30 miles away.
Funny. That's something, but I would not have caught.
Yeah. Well, that's the local boy in me. But but I mean, like, it's like, I thought I enjoyed the beginning, the Reed origin part of it. I thought that was fun. That was nice. And gave us a sense of, okay, here's this genius kid and he's invented this and all that sort of stuff. But the moment that they grew up was the moment where it just seemed like it just completely ran out of gas.
Yeah. And we spend so much time in this movie without anybody having superpowers.
Yep.
And which is fine. Like, I don't need superpowers right at the beginning, but if you're going to spend that much time, like, make it about something, make it about these characters. And instead it's this preposterous notion that we're going to build this teleport machine and then we're all going to get inside it. And it's like, well, and then the only smart person in the entire movie comes along and says, no, we're not going to let you guys get inside it. And their dad is like, what? I'll put a stop to this right away. It's like, what in what universe do the scientists get inside the thing? Like, no, at no point does that ever happen.
Right. but that said, the decision of them. So they what I thought was funny is they do a test. Like, so they build this machine to go into this other dimension, and they put a monkey in it, and they send the test, and then they send the monkey out there, and they bring the monkey back, and they're like, it works. Time to go to men.
His vitals are fine in the 20 seconds after he's arrived. I pretty much think that concludes our experimentation
on
this.
It's time to go to human testing. It's just, yeah. And then, so then, like you said, they are going to go to NASA to get astronauts to go do it or whatever. And now this is the one bit of human part that I thought is that you have, you know, so we're glossing over the fact that this is at the Baxter Foundation, and it's like a, you get the sense that it's a R&D company in Manhattan, and you've got Reed Richards, Sue Storm, Johnny Storm, and Victor Von Doom all working on this project. And with a real sense of pride, apparently Victor Von Doom had started it before, but Reed figured out the last piece of it, so they had to come together. And I'm watching, I'm like, okay, cool, they're gonna bond while they're building it. And you get one montage, one building montage, and I think there was one shot of them eating Chinese food, and like, oh, they're all friends. But right. Aside from that, I got no, and you got a little sense that Victor kind of lusted after Susan, like just a little bit of that. But other than that, there was no relationship building amongst them. There was no camaraderie. There was just no, like, you. It was the kind of thing where I felt as if the filmmakers depended on our knowledge of knowing what those characters are like in the comics and everything else, and were depending on us to plug the pieces together.
I guess.
Which is lazy.
You know, I actually give them a lot of credit for the non-traditional casting, of Sue and Johnny, right? And like going with the fact that Sue is adopted and kind of not making a big deal about that. Like, I kind of dug that. I was like, okay, cool. She's adopted. That's cool. But at no point in that movie do I ever get the sense that those people grew up together.
Right, yeah. Like,
or have any kind of sibling relationship whatsoever.
Yep.
And it's just so easy to make, like, that's the easy stuff.
Right, exactly. And then furthermore, like the romance between Reed and Sue, other than Reed kind of looking at her and then Victor kind of getting annoyed that Reed's looking at her, you got no sense that she liked him back or there was and this is like one of the greatest romances of comics and you got nothing.
I agree.
So they do the machine, they send the monkey, and then they're like, and so then Victor and Johnny Storm and Reed get drunk and say, we're going to do it. That was the one moment of humor. Like, of course they get drunk and say, we're going to do it. Like, I believe that.
And I really liked the speech about how, you know, you never remember the scientists, you only remember Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. And like, I kind of dug that, but everything that happens after that is utterly stupid.
Just ridiculous. Like, so they go over there, Victor ends up staying in the dimension and becomes the villain, of course, and they ruin Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom is the biggest, I think, most egregious error in this. Like, first of all,
it's the most egregious error of many egregious errors.
Yes, of many. And that's saying something, right? First of all, Dr. Doom as a purely abstract piece of design is pretty perfect. Like, just looking at an image of Dr. Doom is awesome. Yep. In any artist that's ever drawn him, even Roger Corman's depiction of Dr. Doom, like, it looks cool. Yep. So why mess with that? Like, why create this really dumb looking bad prosthetic? And even the freaking hood doesn't work. The hood looks like this giant weird thing on the top of his head.
Yep.
So just from purely visual standpoint, Dr. Doom is ruined. But then they give him some indeterminate powers, which are horrifying. He's making people's heads explode.
Yeah.
But what is that? Why is that?
And what is his motivation? So now he wants to destroy the Earth so he can live over in this other dimension alone? No motivation.
There's literally nothing we know about that other dimension.
Yep.
The only thing we know is that it gave these people superpowers somehow. But for some reason, Victor likes it there and has been there a year without eating food or drinking water or like having anything to do. But somehow he really digs it over there for some. We don't know why.
It's just wrong on so many levels.
Yeah.
Many levels. And so, and then that's the other thing, too. So they get drunk. They go to the dimension. Reed decides they can't go without calling Ben I don't understand. And
right.
Ben goes And of course, they come back and the whole thing goes wrong and they end up getting these powers. Sue doesn't go, but she's in the room when they come back and she gets zapped and gets power. Like, it's right. Just they botch. It's like you get handed the silver platter of a great origin and great all the stuff. And I understand that, like, the original Fantastic Four going in a rocket ship and then getting bombarded with cosmic rays doesn't work in a present day story. Okay, I get it. But, like, how you have Sue doesn't even go with them.
I know. It's just so weird.
The whole thing felt so weird. And that's the moment where it all goes off the rails for me. Yeah. You know, so they get back and they find out they have these powers. And of course, the government gets involved and they all take them to some indeterminate place, which clearly is supposed to be SHIELD headquarters.
No, the worst thing that you're leaving out is they get their powers and then we get 1 year later.
Yeah, a year jump. Yeah, no learning. Yep.
The year is the most interesting part.
Right.
That's the part we want to see.
Yeah. And so you jump a year and Ben Grimm is now working for the army and just killing people around the world.
How did we get to that point? The stuff that every superhero origin story can't possibly screw up, which is like the fun thing about learning how to use your powers and being superpowered, they literally skip over.
And to your point, they, you know, a movie is bad when they explain things by someone looking at a computer screen that tells them something. And right. in this case, Reed, you know, like, Reed can stretch. He's Mr. Fantastic. His body can stretch and all stuff like that. The big question is, how does his clothes also stretch? And they just show him looking at a computer with a design of a outfit, you know, like suit, yeah, containment uniform. And then, like, okay, fine, I'm just gonna ignore that. You know, like, it just, like, it's,
and
just,
why did they need to have the suit be the thing that controls Johnny's flame powers?
And like, Sue's disappearing invisibility.
Yeah, I don't
powers.
Understand
yeah.
how that yeah. improves. Like, isn't it cooler if they can control it themselves and they don't need a suit to do it? That's a weird change to make for no reason at all.
Yeah. This was so misstep after misstep after misstep, you know? And yeah, then finally you get the big, you know, they go back, they get Victor Von Doom back from the Dimension X and he kills a bunch of people and then he's going to destroy it. And so they've got to fight him. And it's the cliche. They all try to fight him and they all fail, but then, like, no, we need to do this together. And,
but you're leaving out the fact that that sequence, like, it's a cliche, right? Yep, okay, yep. I would forgive it if it was actually interesting or entertaining on any level.
Right.
Right? Just the pure execution of that action sequence. Literally, what happens is Dr. Doom throws dirt at our heroes.
A lot.
And they get trapped in dirt. They get trapped in dirt, all of them, every single one of them. They're trapped in dirt. that's the way you attack the Thing. It's the way you attack the Human Torch. It's the way you attack the Invisible Woman. They are all of their kryptonites is just dirt.
It's Dimension Zero dirt. The year jump and then the jump to having to fight Dr. Doom. It was almost like reading an outline.
Yeah, no, that's a great way of putting it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that the climax when Dr. Doom, like, ran back into the machine and went back to the dimension, I said to myself, oh man, we have, like, a whole nother act here to go.
Right.
Because clearly they're going to, like, regroup and figure out, like, learn from it and figure out what they're going to do to fight Dr. Nope. We're at the end. They jump. They just follow him in.
In this weird portal that previously didn't exist but works. And just, right, like, it was just, and the thing was, and you know, I know we all go, I think there's a certain amount of fan service that happens in these, that tends to happen in these movies, and I think we've gone around the bend where there's been a lot of fan service, too much, and now they've reeled it back in, and there's just the right amount of fan service in, like, the Marvel Studios movies. This had no fan service.
That's, like, correct, yeah.
Other than referring to Victor as Dr. Doom early in the movie as, like, a kind of a ribbing and a horribly placed "it's clobbering time" during the climax that had no value because you never heard him say that before.
Right.
And, like, that's where I think this fell short. Like, you know, they go to the other dimension. Give me a little Annihilus. Give me a little – yeah, give me some nod to the Fantastic Four mythology.
There is nothing. That other dimension is so central to the plot, and we know literally nothing about it. We know that it has like green goopy stuff. It doesn't look like a place that actually could be a place. Like it doesn't. Also, something my co-host in Slash Filmcast pointed out that I thought was really funny is there's literally one location. Yep. Like every time they travel to the other dimension, it's like the same like 20-foot radius.
I thought the same thing. Like, what are the odds that they keep landing at the same spot? It's like, and that's the thing too, is that like it also like just a uninspiring lack of scenery in the movie. Like so after they get their powers, they go to this, you know, anonymous base in the mountains, and it seems like the only room Sue can go in is the room with all the storage containers, and she just keeps moving them back and forth.
It's like, so bizarre.
Like, it was just so it was just so lacking. It seems as if like once they all started doing the movie, everyone unanimously stopped caring. Like, well, let's just get this over with.
I don't understand it. Yeah. I guess, I mean, the things that I could say positively are I thought the Human Torch effect looked really cool.
Yep. I thought everything about the Human Torch was good. I thought they nailed Johnny from a origin standpoint, that he's rebellious kid who doesn't have find a way but is mechanical and likes to race. They got the car racing in there. They got his sarcasm and his attitude right. I thought the Human Torch was one of the only positive spots of the movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. And you know, and there are some things here and there that aren't awful, but overall, it is a failure on pretty much every level, just like fundamentally on a filmmaking level.
Yeah.
There are so many moments that just don't work. You know, I thought the first time we see Reed stretched was really effective. I really thought like the way it zooms in on his skin and you see it and it looks really real and it looks like, oh my God, that would kind of really be disturbing to see a human being's skin stretched that way.
Yep.
But then every other time we ever see him stretch, it looks
comical.
Stupid.
Comical. Yeah, yeah, like, and it actually had me questioning the concept of the power, to wondering if this is actually a power that can work in modern day. Like, is we talk about how we never thought we, like, the technology wasn't there, and we never thought we'd see like Thor and all these kind of, and Iron Man, all this stuff, but now they exist and stuff like that. And I'm wondering, does Mr. Fantastic have a place in modern day?
I mean, I just look at the Incredibles movie and go, it can work.
Yeah.
It can work. But I mean, obviously that's a cartoony look anyway, but
it's just very, very strange. Very, very strange. I mean, this was very much, I mean, like you said earlier, it owes a lot to the Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
But Sue's costume owes a lot to the Ultimate Fantastic Four. And I thought that was good with the gloves and the short sleeves. Like, that was a nice comic to real world transition.
Yeah. Yeah.
But really, if I'm talking about the costume, like, that's not a good sign. Like, it's
not a good sign.
No, I thought the two biggest, failures of this were Ben Grimm. Mm-hmm. Who was just, it was just blank slate, just nothing, nothing redeemable, nothing loving, nothing about what makes Ben Grimm such a great character is in there.
The whole movie is like that. Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah. It feels joyless. It feels humorless. There's no fun. There's not even like the worst, superhero movies. Oftentimes there's at least one action sequence where you can go, well, that was kind of cool. Like Green Lantern. There's several action sequences in Green Lantern where I was like, all right, that's pretty cool.
You're being far more generous to Green Lantern than
maybe so. But I just feel like this movie is it really feels like we're piling on, but that's only because of how bad it is.
It's baffling. I mean, and it's the thing. And I was when I was walking home from the movie, I was talking about it, and I was like, you know, honestly, it is the most offensive and egregious misstep that a movie like this can take, which is like, you want to give me bad, give me Catwoman, Roger Corman level bad, Ghost Rider. Give me something to latch onto to laugh about how bad it is.
Right.
But the biggest offense this movie makes is that it's just uninspired and it's forgettable and it's and it was just like it was so mediocre, middle of the road. Not taking any risk, not putting any heart into it. It was just by the numbers and kind of soulless. That's the worst kind of movie, if you ask me. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. It really makes Rise of the Silver Surfer seem like you know, Gone with the Wind. It's
yeah. I didn't mind the first two Fantastic Four, the Jessica Alba movies. I think
Rise of the Silver Surfer is actually pretty decent. I've defended it a bunch of times. I think the first Fantastic Four is not so great, but I think Rise of the Silver Surfer actually has some really fun stuff in it.
Yeah, and I think you're right about, you know, go back and make it a period piece if you're going to do the origin. But what I couldn't help thinking during the movie is like, make a movie where they're just established. Forget the origin. We know the origin. Oh. Now they're the Fantastic Four. They live in the Baxter Building and they do science and they go on crazy cosmic adventures and just go. Just go.
I totally agree. And I think, well, I have two versions of this that I would love to see. The second version, which is the one that you're kind of talking about, is that it's really about celebrity. And like these are and that was kind of what the Rise of the Silver Surfer was about. But you could have it be they're established, they're known, they're an institution in New York.
Right.
You know, that would be a really fun, cool movie. The other version, which is, you know, everybody's saying, well, if this tank's bad enough, maybe Marvel will get the rights back.
Nope.
I think Marvel has done this really smart, cool thing where they've established like two different time periods of Marvel history where, you know, you have old Hank Pym and young Scott Lang, and like Hank Pym was awesome in his day. And we have sort of the old generation, you know, Tony Stark's dad and like that whole generation of Marvel heroes. And we keep hearing stories about how there was awesome stuff going on back then.
Yeah.
Like have that be where the Fantastic Four is set. Have it be this thing that was around in the 60s. And then if you want to come to present day, they're all, you know, in their 50s. I think or 50s or 60s. That would be awesome, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I it's funny because, you know, I and everybody talks about Marvel getting back the movie rights and all, like it's Fox, it's not going to happen. Like everybody's going to stop thinking that way. Marvel Entertainment has given up on trying to get Fantastic Four and X-Men back. So like everyone, like I know we and everyone thinks Spider-Man is shows that can happen, but that was Sony. Like the relationship between Fox and Marvel is so deteriorated that I don't think we'll ever see it in our lifetime. But the thing is that I believe that Fox is capable of making good movies. I mean, look at the X-Men movies. There was a spark, there was a je ne sais quoi, there was something about X-Men First Class that got you excited again. And Days of Future Past continued that. You know, I think Days of Future Past had some flaws, and I would have liked to have seen a movie in between the two. Like I would have wanted another 60s X-Men movie, that sort of thing. And I feel like the retro thing, the Mad Men approach, is a bit of a crutch that people look to. But I think it fits here. I think the idea of exploration, the space race, all that sort of stuff, it all fits within Fantastic Four. And just give me something to hold on to. There was nothing to hold on to in this movie. Just
I agree. Nothing. Yeah, it just needed to be injected with fun. Yeah. There is nothing fun that ever happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they had a checklist. Like at the end of the movie, when Johnny's ribbing Ben Grimm, and you get the sense of their rivalry. But like that was just it was at the end of the movie, and it was 20 seconds at most.
Yeah, and the only thing you've ever seen Ben Grimm do in this entire movie is be devastated about his life, and it kind of feels like, wow, Johnny's a dick.
Yeah,
like,
no. All Ben Grimm does in this movie is be devastated about his life and carry Reed's heavy shit.
Like, yeah.
That's all he does.
Yeah. So that ribbing like doesn't feel fun at all. It just feels like, oh man, wow. And my God, that ending is so painful.
Was rough. And how do you take them out of Manhattan?
I don't understand.
Like either. The ending is like the government just gives them an installation in the mountains, and and they look at this big room, and Johnny's like, oh, I want over there. Like what did you? It's just nonsense machinery, and just like
none of it makes any sense. The fact that the government would be like, wow, no one knows you saved the world, but we know, so let's give these high school kids a bunch of expensive stuff.
Oh my God. And then just the shoving the fantastic thing down their throat. It was just, it was like, we should be a team. We need a name. It was like, you're right. This is like, if you told me this came out in 1998, I would believe it.
Right. It feels like this weird time capsule from a time before we knew how to make superhero movies.
Yeah. And I hate to dump on it, but it was just offensive. It was offensive. So,
yeah. It's one of the worst movies I've seen in a long time.
That's rough. Well, I'm sorry to make you talk about it again, Jeff.
That's the fun part.
Yeah. Well, so I think we've spent enough time kind of bashing it, and I wish there was something redeemable to be excited about. There wasn't even throw an end credit sequence in. Everybody loves that. All you got to do is 30 seconds of something weird happening during the credits. Nope.
Yeah. I half expected, there's that one point where they like get back to Earth and they're looking over that giant pit, that giant hole in the ground. And I was like, oh, just have a little Fin Fang Foom come out of there.
Yeah, just a like little, anything. A little moloid, like a little dude scurry away or something. Yeah. Nothing. Oh God. All right. Well, anyway, so Jeff, thanks for giving us some of your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's always fun talking to you, Ron. I really appreciate you having me.
Yeah. So where can the people find you online?
Easiest way is to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, and that's spelled with two N's and one T. I do a bunch of shows, the Slash Filmcast. I do a video game show called DLC that's at 5by5.tv/DLC. And I do a comedy show called We Have Concerns, and that's at wehaveconcerns.com.
Which is a very fine comedy show that I'm a fan of. So
thank you.
Yes. Awesome. And you can head over to ifanboy.com where you can comment on this podcast, tell everyone what you thought of Fantastic Four. If you have any redeeming things to say, please let the community know. We want to see it. And like I said, this is the last superhero movie of the year, so we are done with our special editions. Although I might pull the band back together in the fall to talk about some of the TV that's coming out, because there's just so much great comic book inspired TV this fall. So
and next year there will be plenty of superhero movies.
Yes, exactly. After that Deadpool trailer, I'm kind of excited about Deadpool. Man. So there's a Fox property. So yeah. We'll see. So excellent. All right. So check out ifanboy.com for all your stuff, and you can find me on Twitter at RonXO. And until next time, please go see a good movie this weekend.
Yeah, go see Mission Impossible. It's really good.
Don't see this.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.